Did you know that inside your body right now is a medicine that can effectively treat over 100 so-called untreatable diseases? Inside each one of us is the most powerful medicine ever known to man. From the time that we are born, we all have what are called adult stem cells. I prefer a more accurate term, repair stem cells, because that is what they are, that is what they do, and that is what they keep doing. Great doctors from all over the world are now using repair stem cells to save and improve lives. Heart patients who were told to go home and die are now regularly jogging uphill. The symptoms of Parkinson's patients are being reduced. Blind children are slowly gaining some sight. Autistic children are taking a step back toward normalcy. Some paralyzed patients who were told that they would never walk again are walking again. And this is merely the beginning of the greatest medical science in the history of the world. I'm Don Margolis of the Repair Stem Cell Institute, and we want you to have all of the information about this amazing field of medical self-repair. This information could just save the life of someone you love. Hi, everybody. This is Don Margolis back again. Right off, we want to give you the call-in numbers. Anybody has a stem cell question they want to call in, toll-free, 888-429-5471. If you're not in the United States and Canada, you can call 530 is the area code. Of course, you have to start that with a 1, which is the USA country code, 1-530-646-4187, and we'd like to hear from you. We're going to kick off today with our usual discussion about the embryonic hoax and why it exists and how well it's being handled. Back in 1998, Dr. James Thompson at the University of Wisconsin-Madison was the first to isolate embryonic stem cells, and at the same time, Dr. Doris Taylor at Duke University did an animal test that proved absolutely that adult stem cells can treat heart patients by doing it on lab animals. She gave them bad diets, they became heart patients, and she started treating them with stem cells, and they got better. She wrote a paper. That paper excited the whole research world. And doctors all over the world tried to duplicate her or tried to disprove her or prove what she proved. And nobody was able to disprove it. They tried different animals. They tried different stem cells. They tried different protocols. Everybody got positive results. Now, both Dr. James Thompson and Dr. Taylor, both excellent research and both exceptionally honest, expected their stem cells to be used on humans in within 15 to 20 years. Imagine the surprise of Dr. Taylor when 2 years later, three major countries announced that they were going to do human clinical trials on adult stem cells using the patient's own stem cells. This is just 2 years after her animal studies, and a lot of animal studies followed, which proved what she said. So she later on she said she just was shocked. She was expecting 15 to 20 years, and here they were in the third year doing clinical trials on humans. Well, there was a clinical trial in Brazil taking dying patients who are hoping for a heart transplant, and the results were spectacular. And the results were so good, and the test was so good, that the American Heart Association published the paper, thus saying to the world that American doctors approved of this wonderful find, and it was really important. That happened in April of 2003. And what happened in the next 8 months is history. And that is, big medicine led by Big Pharma came up with a perfect plan to stop adult stem cells from ruining their profits. And they have spent well over $100 million, if not $200 million, on just that, keeping adult stem cells from you. Now, the way they do it in the United States is very easy. They got the United States senators to approve the owning and operation of the Food and Drug Administration, which means that pharma controls what foods and drugs you can eat. So the FDA is not what you think of as an organization that's supposed to protect you from all the bad things that you can walk into, but to improve the profits of Big Pharma. Now, this was obvious as early as 2005. It's actually started, the whole embryonic hoax started January 1st, 2004. And since then, they've taken over the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta. They are coming out with the usual garbage that and anything they can to increase the profits of pharma. And the so-called National Institutes of Health, which is run by 100-plus very, very top doctors, and every time they are asked to make a decision, somehow, strangely enough, those decisions always increase the profits of pharma. And I'm not saying sometimes. I'm not saying 99%. I'm saying 100%. But people, you can't read in the New York Times why this is. Well, the one TV station in Chicago finally exposed it, that of all those doctors, over 75% of all the doctors making those votes are major shareholders in pharma. Duh. And those are the organizations which you think are protecting you. Well, how do they keep stem cells away from you? Easy. They control every newspaper. Imagine pharma saying to the New York Times, we're doing $75 million a year in advertising in the New York Times, and if you ever print anything positive about adult stem cells, you will lose our advertising. And that goes to every newspaper, to television networks, to television stations, to radio stations, and especially medical journals. They all are responsible to pharma for continuing the profits, and especially universities. And I'll name the worst ones: Stanford, Harvard, Penn, Johns Hopkins. All of them lie about stem cells. So that's one way they do it. Another way is they pay scientists to run clinical trials that disprove that stem cells really work. Now, it's really tough to do because they always work, but they're able to do it, and they come up with various reasons. So that's why that you see some articles of studies, quote unquote, proving that stem cells don't work. And of course, these are phony trials. They pay the doctors, and they pay the doctors. And if the doctor is unusually honest, they pay him to accent the negative and forget about the positive, even though that's not what his test showed. Now, let's close this with an interesting fact. The greatest hero of stem cells is Dr. Doris Taylor, who did her study at Duke University and shortly afterwards got a great job at the University of Minnesota. And she was easily the godmother of stem cell treatments. Now, you know of a place on the internet called Wikipedia. Now, Wikipedia is, and I'm the first to say it, an unusually honest organization. However, there are millions of subjects, and they have various small committees whose job it is prove or disprove or get accurate facts as much as possible on various subjects. Now, Doris Taylor was the greatest stem cell doctor of the last quarter century. Yet, you put Doris Taylor up on Wikipedia, and here's what pharma's great doctors did to the Doris Taylor story. She graduated college, some 35 years ago, and then Wikipedia says she graduated from college back in 1980 or whenever, and she did nothing. After that, nothing worth mentioning until 2008. And then they, even though in 2005, she proved that you can construct a heart from human stem cells, and in 2008, she's spreading this this benefit around into Europe and the United States, but she did nothing. As far as pharma's crooked doctors who run the Wikipedia section on stem cells. So while Wikipedia is not to blame, but we know who is, and saying that Dr. Taylor did nothing when it's she is responsible for over 50,000 human beings getting adult stem cells to improve their lives in the last 10 years. So much for the embryonic hoax for today. And a special surprise today, we have our America's greatest stem cell nutritionist with us, Dr. James Brawley. Jim, what's new in the world of stem cell nutrition?
Well, thank you, Don. I'm going to talk a little bit about the role of vitamin D and stem cell therapy. First of all, if you were to ask me in what areas of research is there the most energy and excitement, I would say stem cell research, perhaps gluten sensitivity, celiac disease, and right up there is research in the area of vitamin D deficiency and human disease. Last year alone, there are over 3,800 published scientific studies on vitamin D deficiency just in the year 2012. And over 100 medical conditions are associated with, made worse by, or caused by vitamin D deficiency, including what caught my attention, many of the conditions presently being treated with stem cells. To begin with, without going through an entire list of over 100 medical conditions, vitamin D deficiency is associated with premature death from all causes, an increased risk of premature death from all causes, longer stays in the hospital, more likely to enter the hospital with pneumonia, difficult to treat, longer stays because of pneumonia, and an overall poor quality of life, more pain, less sleep, less vitality, poorer general health, poor functioning physically, and also poor functioning at the job. But in terms of diseases, we see such diseases associated with vitamin D insufficiency or deficiency is multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, insulin-dependent diabetes, non-insulin-dependent diabetes, coronary artery disease, congestive heart failure, cardiomyopathies, where the muscle of the heart is diseased, strokes, Parkinson's. In fact, interestingly enough, one of the highest concentrations of vitamin D receptor sites are in the area of the brain most affected by Parkinson's disease called the substantia nigra, Alzheimer's disease, dementia, brain atrophy, where the brain actually decreases in size, COPD, kidney failure with dialysis, Crohn's disease, and chronic pain syndromes, including low back pain, chronic pain in women, diabetic pain, are worse with vitamin D deficiency and lessen with vitamin D therapy. So what is this vitamin D? One of the areas that's changed a lot is how we view it. More and more researchers are backing away from calling it a vitamin because it really isn't. It's a hormone. It's actually a neurosteroid that has a lot of functions throughout the body as a hormone, as a neurosteroid. What is vitamin D deficiency? Well, that's technically speaking is when you have blood levels that are deficient. I'll mention them, but hopefully not spend too much time on them, but they're important. Depending on the authority, any value less than 50 nanograms per milliliter, which, by the way, makes up approximately 70% of the American adult and children population. Let me repeat that. if 50 nanograms per milliliter is the cutoff point, up to 70% of Americans are vitamin D insufficient. An optimal level now is considered to be 50 to 100 units for heart patients who are vitamin D deficient to reduce their risk of death from heart disease by 60%. If they can get their value up to about 60 nanograms per milliliter, you can accomplish that. where do you get vitamin D? Well, obviously, one of the best places, if not the best, is from the sun. It converts cholesterol in the skin to another form of vitamin D, which is then taken to the kidneys and liver and converted into the active form, which is called vitamin D3. You can also get it from foods, fish, egg yolk, fortified foods, and so forth. But interestingly enough, Americans are not getting enough of it. And real briefly, I think it's because of bad science publicly proclaimed by so-called experts over the last 20 years. We've been told it's so dangerous that we have people wearing clothes when they ought to be exposed to sun. They have them sunblocked when they ought to have their skin free of sunblock, and have a lot of sunshine in their life without sunburn. We've had just the opposite, kind of like the low-fat diet actually harmed people rather than helping it because they excluded essential fatty acids like fish oil from the diet of Americans, and that resulted in chronic disease. And then interestingly enough, within the last 10 years, there's a pioneer doctor in Brazil, a neurologist, who started treating MS and other autoimmune disease very aggressively with vitamin D, a lot of sunshine, a lot of oral vitamin D therapy, very high doses, and he was claiming that he was getting reversal and remission of multiple sclerosis and other autoimmune diseases. Well, this caught my attention, and I started kind of connecting dots. And I said, well, what does vitamin D deficiency do to stem cells? And lo and behold, right in the scientific literature says the following. If you're vitamin D deficient and you want to mobilize the stem cells you have in your body to go to the sites of disease that need repair and regeneration, that mobilization will be depressed if you're vitamin D deficient. So the concentration of stem cells in the bloodstream are dramatically reduced in vitamin D deficient or insufficient patients. Also, you want it to go to the areas that need repair. It's called trafficking. You want it to go there in order to repair and regenerate the tissues that need that. Interesting enough, vitamin D deficient patients do not do a good job of directing their own stem cells or stem cells administered in stem cell centers to the areas most in need of repair and regeneration. And then finally, or almost finally, once the stem cells get to the area that needs repair, you want them to differentiate or transform into those tissues. That's called differentiation. Vitamin D deficiency is associated with poor differentiation of stem cells into tissues that need repair and regeneration. Finally, vitamin D deficiency seems to inhibit neurogenesis, a very, very important word in stem cell therapy, the ability of the nervous system, primarily the central nervous system, the brain and spinal cord, to actually create new brain cells and new nerve cells. Vitamin D deficient patients do not do a good job on that. So with this in mind, we at the Stem Cell Center of North America, Dr. Ramirez and I put together the following protocol that we've had in effect for about the last year or so. We test all patients before and after stem cell therapy. By test, that means blood tests. A blood test for vitamin D is available in all the major clinical laboratories in North America. It's relatively inexpensive and real important to be monitored. Why? Because you want to maintain optimal blood levels of vitamin D, not insufficient levels. And we work to try to achieve optimal levels with our patients through sunshine, through vitamin D3 supplementation, and by eating certain foods, including oily fish, that are rich in vitamin D. And try to optimize them, 50 to 100 nanograms per milliliter for most patients, autoimmune patients, including MS patients, rheumatoid arthritis patients, Crohn's patients, lupus patients, at or above 100 nanograms per milliliter. So what we're really saying here is that stem cells are no different than any other cell in the human body. They do their best when the nourishment around them and in them is optimized. If you're poorly nourished and receiving stem cells will suffer from your poor nutrition. If you're vitamin D deficient, your stem cells will not work as well. So our view, our perspective is that we want to have the stem cells as well as other cells in your body optimally nourished. One of the ways of doing that is to blood test for vitamin D and then achieve and maintain optimal blood levels during and after stem cell therapy at our center. So, Don, with that, back to you.
Dr. Jim, let's bring up a strange patient that was treated a long time ago and a very amusing story. I'm a Philadelphia boy, but I live in Bangkok now, and I get to Philadelphia 1 week a year approximately, and I stay with my sister and her husband, and I came in from a busy day, and it was 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I picked up the morning paper, the Philadelphia Inquirer, and was ruffling through it, and suddenly I saw an article in one of the back pages about a benefit party for a guy who wanted to get stem cells. And I started reading this article, and it was a patient that we had scheduled to come to our stem cell treating center in Bangkok. And I couldn't believe it. Here it was, the story was in the paper. And it was, the party was about an hour and a half's drive from where I was, and I couldn't possibly get there in time for it, but and I wish I had seen it an hour earlier, so I didn't get to see the party. But when the chap got to Bangkok for his treatment, he and I became friends, and I told him the story. And he's a wonderful guy, and he had just gotten he was a Vietnam vet and had nice, interesting stories. But he was chubby, and he was one of the very few people I know who refused to change his diet. Didn't actually refuse; he just didn't go very far to improve his diet. And this guy was the only guy that I know, and his name, I call him Philly Rick. Philly Rick was the only guy I know who was overweight to start with and stayed overweight and kept getting better and better. His heart kept getting better and better, and I'm talking now 6-7 years. Not only that, but he was a diabetic, and without him even knowing it, he got down to below 7 in his HbA1c test and was technically no longer a diabetic at 6.5. So the stem cells did all that for him. And to this day, Philly Rick and I are still very close. Now I have a couple of people, pre-recorded interview on two people who were just treated for a very serious lung disease. The husband was treated. This is Carl Teachauer and his wife, Gail. Can we start this interview?
This is Don Margolis on the line with Carl and Gail Teachauer of Arizona. They just made a long trip to Arizona to get some stem cells, and while it's far too early to see how good the stem cells or how much the stem cells are going to do for them, I wanted to get their opinion about the whole trip. Carl, you have a lung situation that you went for stem cell treatment for. How did you handle that long flight to Buenos Aires?
I handled it real well. I was able to borrow a Eclipse portable concentrator and enough batteries to go ahead and be able to, you know, recharge on the way to Buenos Aires. So especially in Houston. So
okay.
There was no problem at all.
Good to hear. Now, Gail, I know you were nervous.
That's right.
And when you got to the airport, they were waiting for you. Who was waiting for you when you got to the airport?
When we got to the airport in Buenos Aires, Julieta, who was our interpreter, was waiting for us. She had our name on a sign, and so we were able to find each other. And then we all walked out of the airport to a vehicle that Luis was driving so he could take us to San Nicolas.
Did anybody remember to bring your baggage with you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And very helpful. Julieta right away took our carry-on luggage and helped us in the baggage claim area with the check-in. Everybody was very helpful.
Good. So you got off to a good start and maybe got a little of your nervousness down. Hold it. My tablet is acting up. I imagine that Julieta checked you into the hotel on Wednesday when you arrived on at the San Nicolas, and there was no problem there. When did you first meet Dr. Vigna?
We met Dr. Vigna after we were admitted to the hospital on Thursday, early afternoon.
Oh, that's a good way to celebrate July 4th. And you got to meet Dr. Vigna. Gail, I'm sure you were still nervous at that point. What happened when you met Dr. Vigna?
He was very cordial. I found out he knew more English than I thought, enough to introduce himself and to tell me not to be so nervous and that everything would go smoothly. A very warm, friendly man.
Carl, as far as you're concerned, did everything go smoothly?
Everything went absolutely smoothly, yeah. I mean, like I said, from the time we were admitted in the hospital till after the procedure, Dr. Vigna was there several times, during my stay, so, and all the nurses and everybody else, so just,
Gail, can you, in a nutshell, give us what Carl's breathing problem was like before the stem cell treatment?
Well, since the beginning of 2013 of the year, things have been going somewhat downhill. He's had the pulmonary fibrosis a very long time, but suddenly he was getting much, much sicker. He had two hospitalizations for lung infections. And when he went in for the second hospitalization, which was just, we had already made arrangements to go into Argentina, he was on oxygen by that time. So definitely it was getting much, much worse, and at one point he had to be on oxygen high enough that the concentrator was at its highest peak, and lots of coughing. He was unable to really, even with oxygen, walk from one place to another due to the infections on top of the pulmonary fibrosis.
Okay, that's pretty clear, and thank you, Gail. Carl, how did you feel psychologically at the morning after the stem cell treatment? How did you feel psychologically?
I felt good. I mean, just knowing the fact that, it was done, and that was the kind of my whole, intention of going there. To get the procedure done one way or the other. And, psychologically, I mean, that was very positive.
Okay. Gail, as you know, Carl and I and you have been talking for well over 2 months prior to the treatment. And is it my imagination or is Carl's voice stronger now than it was before?
It's definitely stronger. It's very in total. He has already more stamina and strength, and it shows in his actions as well as his voice.
Well, that's typical, and we want to tell our listeners this. This has nothing to do with who the doctor was, where you got the treatment. If you get stem cells for virtually anything, and I mean virtually anything, that they treat, from a competent doctor, somehow Somehow, the first thing that happened, and by golly, you were treated on July 5th, which is 12 days ago, and in those 12 days you've got what most stem cell patients get, which is increased stamina and increased strength, before you even get a clue that the stem cells are working for what you want them to work for, whether it's heart disease or lung disease or diabetes. The first thing that happens is your body gets stronger. And our job here at the Repair Stem Cell Institute, of course, is to make Carl's improvement as permanent as possible. And the way we do that is to make sure your lifestyle is changed into a perfect diet and exercise program. Have you talked yet to Dr. Brawley?
Yes, I have. Actually,
Dr. Brawley is a stem cell expert and a nutrition expert, and he's going to get information from Carl and teach Carl how to get a better life with diet and exercise to make the stem cells very healthy and do their thing. Thank you, Carl and Gail. I hope to talk to you in another month or two, and you can give our listeners your progress at that time. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
You're very welcome. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, let's take a break. It's the bottom of the hour. Let's take a break. We'll be back in a minute.
Since 2005, Don Margolis has been quietly earning the title of the voice of stem cell science for his tireless advocacy of the safety and efficacy of repair stem cells to help patients recover from more than 100 different diseases and medical conditions, including the big three chronic killers in the U.S., cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. Learn the truth about stem cells with Don Margolis, chairman and founder of the Repair Stem Cell Institute, the world's only stem cell patient advocacy company, helping you and your loved ones to make educated choices and connect with the world's finest stem cell doctors on BBS Radio.
Thanks. Once again, the toll-free number is 888-429-5471. We have another one of our unique patients coming up in about 12 minutes with a live interview. It's Boston Dave, and he's unusual for other reasons. Now we're going to talk about what is really wrong with our system. Is that it was predicted by America's greatest medical scientist ever, a gentleman by the name of Linus Pauling, who almost 40 years ago predicted exactly what was going to happen to our medical system. I mean, word for word, he told us. And what he told us was that if you keep going for chemicals to try to repair your body, you're fighting the human body at all steps. And his exact words were this: everything in the treatment of and prevention of chronic diseases, which is not natural to the human body, will fail. The mechanisms of our bodily systems are unwilling in the medium term to react cooperatively to substances which are toxic to the human body, which is, and these are my words, which is virtually every drug, not virtually, which is every drug you ever take prescribed by a doctor is toxic to your body in one form or another. Even aspirin, which is one of the milder ones, is toxic to a certain extent. Continuing Linus Pauling, orthodox medicine will attempt to compensate for its disregard of this maxim, which is born out of narrow-mindedness and ignorance of the laws of nature, by spending vast sums of money, by commissioning research on a gigantic scale, and by propaganda. That's a direct quote. Continuing,
The attempt will fail, but it will cause a tremendous explosion in health costs, which will lead to a serious social upheaval and economic and political crisis. Welcome to the future, ladies and gentlemen, predicted exactly by Linus Pauling almost 40 years ago. Even industries that merge into vast conglomerates in order to be able to finance non-biological medicines will fail. No amount of money in the world will ever make it possible to imitate the development of effective substances over hundreds of millions of years of biofunctional adaptation. Now, that's what he predicted 40 years ago. And since then, exactly as he predicted, the United States is spending an uncontrollably large amount of dollars for the worst medical system in the developed world. I repeat, Americans jumping up and down and pretending to be patriotic say, we got the best medical system. It is the worst. No chronic disease, none, is allowed to be cured in the American medical system. If some poor doctor finds a cure for a chronic disease, if he's lucky, he loses his license. If he's unlucky, he goes to jail. And if he's very unlucky, he winds up dead as a suicide or in an accident. You do not cure any chronic disease in the United States of America and expect to survive. So what happens is all of us who get chronic diseases, automatically, as soon as you're diagnosed with a chronic disease that will never go away, you know absolutely that your life expectancy is down by a significant number of years. Take a heart failure patient who was diagnosed at age 65. If he wasn't diagnosed, he would expect another 20 years. That would be his expectancy. But if he's diagnosed, half of them die in the first 6 years. And the rest die at triple the rate after those 6 years. They die at triple the rate of the non-chronic disease patients. So that the guy who doesn't have a heart disease or a chronic disease, and he's 65, will last on average to age 85. The guy who has heart disease lasts to 73. So that's the American medical system. Now, usually we never hear about this stuff. You can't, no newspaper would print it. But now we have the internet and stuff does get out. There's an organization called the Institute of Medicine in Washington, D.C. And the Journal of the American Medical Association, that is the journal, the medical journal of the entire medical association in America, wrote the following following editorial. Despite a level of health expenditures that would have seemed unthinkable a generation ago, the health of the U.S. population has improved only gradually and has fallen behind the pace of progress in many other wealthy nations. This was written by an MD at the Institute of Medicine in Washington, D.C. Enough on that subject. You've just heard the main reason why you can't get stem cells in the United States of America or North America and Canada or Western Europe, all because every medical system in the developed world is controlled by big medicine. And the prime example is the FDA in the United States. 18% of our money goes to doctors, hospitals, and mostly to big medicine, while in Europe the average is 10%. Okay. We now have another different kind of stem cell patient. He also went down to Dr. Vina in Argentina, and he didn't know whether to get his diabetes treated or his lung difficulty treated or his, but he knew he wanted his heart treated number one. So Dr. Vina gave him a special price to treat all three on the same day. No other doctor in the world would even try it, but Vina does two diseases on the same day very often, and sometimes even three. So Dave Merrow, are you on board?
Yes, I am, Don.
How are you feeling, Dave?
Fabulous. Unbelievable. It's
been 2 years and 1 month if my computer's working. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, it sure has.
And
that's 100% right.
Let's talk about, as I recall, your heart situation. Give us a quick definition before and after.
Okay. The bottom half of my heart was dead. My primary care physician had given me 6 months to live. My ejection fraction was almost non-existent. A heart transplant was out of the question because of my age. And so I started researching, and lo and behold, I found your name and the stem cells and gave you a call and had absolutely no idea what to expect. But through all the talking to you so many times and you answering all my questions, on blind faith, went to Argentina to see Dr. Vigna. Your heart today is,
where's your ejection fraction?
It's almost 2.5 times higher than it was when I was told I had 6 months to live.
Okay, let's not get accused of overselling here. Dave's regeneration was spectacular, no question about it. The average patient, this is based on several hundred patients treated in our early years, 2005 to 2009, and goes like this. The average age of our patients was 62.5. The average inbound baseline ejection fraction was 27, which if you walk into a cardiologist and he sees you, it's a 27, the first thing he says, you need a pacemaker or a defibrillator, and he's right. But 27 was the start, and coming out from the stem cell patient, the average guy came out with 34, and that was at the three-month mark. At the six-month mark, it was 36, and at the one-year mark, it was 37. They're 37, they're already living much better lives. Some patients are, we can't predict what. Is it because they got good diets or they got plenty of vitamin D? We don't know. But some people continue to get better as their stem cells keep working. Others level off at the one to 2 year mark, and they're very happy with what they got. Dave, tell us about your lung problem.
Well, my lungs, all my life I've had horrible lungs. Breathing capacity was almost zero. And that combined with my heart, I was barely living. So I decided through talking to you and Dr. Vigna to not only do my heart, but also my lungs. My lungs today, my lung capacity is about 79%. Prior to the procedures, it was almost non-existent. It's unbelievable. I mean, I can do things today that I couldn't do just about all my whole life because of my lungs, especially, and then because of my heart. I can't say enough, and I'm not trying to sell this. This really happened to me. I mean, this is life-changing.
Okay, well, we appreciate that, and we appreciate your being direct. Now, as I recall, the diabetes improvement was not up to the heart and the lung improvements, but as I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, that your insulin requirements were reduced.
They were reduced a little bit, not as much as I had hoped, but of the three, there was a little improvement, but not a lot. But because my heart and lungs are so good, I can exercise, and now there's a lot of improvement. So the benefit is unbelievable.
Dave, you are one lucky fellow. You were lucky.
I sure am.
That you went with your gut instead of listening to, as Dr. Broly often points out, nonsense from doctors. Nonsense like low-fat diets and not nonsense like diets don't mean anything and nonsense like that. So
Dave? I had an appointment with my cardiologist today, and he told me stem cells don't work.
Yeah, right. It's those pills he gave you that made your heart, your ejection fraction jump up.
That's what he said. And I told him, I said, there's no way in hell that a pill could more than double my ejection fraction. And there's no way it could make a dead bottom of my heart regenerate. So I didn't let him, he asked me why they don't do it in the United States, and I told him. I said, money. The pharmaceutical companies, hospitals. And it's funny, we had a conversation today. I couldn't believe it. I said, this is wonderful. I'm going to be talking to Don tonight, and it's fabulous that my doctor's trying to give me this line. It makes no sense at all.
Giving him the benefit of the doubt, he hardly stands a chance. He's got corrupt medical journals which he reads, which are filled with lies. Here's something I didn't mention earlier. And we'll let you go, Dave. And thanks for coming on. Here's something that doctors don't know about medical journals. In the year 2002 and 2003, before the American Heart Association accepted that great paper, the three journals, Nature, Science, and New England Journal, among them, published more than one positive article about adult stem cells every month in those 24 months. Every month there was an article, a positive article about adult stem cells at least one of those three journals. And then came January 1st, 2004, and suddenly, as if by coincidence, no positive articles about adult stem cells, which were getting huge scientific increases every month, being published, not in the United States, but being published around the world about huge increases in stem cell science, but you couldn't read about it in the United States or Canada, not allowed. The medical journals, Science, Nature, and New England Journal printed nothing but lies. Lies, lies, and more lies. So the more they print their lies, your doctor, your cardiologist has no chance. He reads the journal and it tells him stem cells don't work. And so he tells those lies to his patients and they don't get stem cells, and pharma's profits go up another notch. And that's what happens. Now let's talk. I got a question here from a listener. It says, what prevents the stem cells from migrating to other organs of the body from being diluted in the blood? Nothing. There are always cells which escape into the bloodstream. They are then simply grabbed by another organ in need of repair. How do I know? Because I was the first to discover this way back in 06. What happened was we were treating heart patients, and a good percentage of them had diabetes. And unbeknownst to us, we kept tabs on them as how they were doing with their heart disease. And we found out that of those who, the 70% of the treated patients whose heart disease improved, of the diabetics, 18% of the diabetics had their insulin needs drastically cut, and they couldn't figure out why. And of course, I couldn't figure out why, neither could any of my doctors, because we had no clue that the escaped stem cells were going to be able to be grabbed by the pancreas and improve the diabetes situation. So that's that now happens with every patient is subject to something like this. You could get lucky elsewhere. So, yes, stem cells can migrate to other parts of the body. Now, we're going to have a special section, which is somebody asked me a question that raised this subject, and I was surprised to find out what I'm about to tell you, and that is what general improvements have been made in stem cell therapy recently. And the answer is, there are three significant improvements in stem cell treatments started after January 1, 2012. First, let's reiterate what Dr. Brawley said. Diet and supplements are now accepted by the most advanced stem cell doctors as necessary for the patient to get the greatest benefit from stem cell therapy. We at Repair Stem Cell Institute have seen too much proof of this fact, so that one of our patients are treated by a good stem cell doctor who doesn't want to bother about nutrition, the Repair Stem Cell Institute buys and pays for expert nutrition consulting from Dr. Brawley after their stem cell implants by another doctor. Nothing is more important to the Repair Stem Cell Institute than patients getting better after stem cells. Second, although no clinical trials have ever proven it, most stem cell doctors believe that mesenchymal stem cells are the strongest you can get from a patient. They start with the tiniest numbers and must be cultured to bring up the count to usable amounts. Cord blood stem cells have the richest mesenchymal counts, and these clinics which use cord blood now use only mesenchymal stem cells, easily grown to large numbers since they don't have to wait for the patient to donate them. So that's two things, diet and supplements, one, and mesenchymal stem cells, two. Prior to 2012, very, very few doctors actually bothered about mesenchymal cells, and even they had to charge a large amount to culture them. Third, for years we have warned that having stem cells implanted intravenously was a waste, other than for lung transplants. Giving intravenous treatments to brain-injured patients was a waste, and still is. But there are now several machine devices which can, from outside the patient, push his intravenous stem cells to their target organ. The heart, for sure, and the pancreas for diabetes, and even to the brain for Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. Repair Stem Cell Institute believes that this process will be used more and more over the next few years, using intravenous stem cell implants, but only if you can guide them to the proper organ you're trying to treat. So those are the three things which we believe is the future of stem cell treatments in the developed world. Now let's go back and look at another interesting patient. This chap's name is Texas Joe. Texas Joe got his stem cells, and he was in Bangkok, and he was the happiest guy, and he says, there is no doubt in my mind these stem cells are going to make me better. And I said, yeah, but take it easy, because tomorrow you're going to feel like crap and you're going to want to lay in bed all day. He says, no, not me. And so he and a few patients were operated on and had their stem cells implanted in a what we called then mini surgery. And everybody was laying in bed moaning. We don't do mini surgery anymore, but back in those days we did in 2006. And except Joe, Texas Joe was up and about dragging his intravenous medicine on the roller and going around chatting with other patients and talking to the nurses and having a good old time. And he went down to while others were laying in bed, not even wanting to eat, he went down to the cafeteria with his wife and had something to eat. And he kept saying, I'm going to get better. And the doctors were keeping people back in those days, 5-6 days, to make sure everything was all right. And he was assuming, he was just insisting he should go. Well, let's fast forward 11 weeks after treatment. 11 weeks after treatment, he had been going down to a property of his and chopping down trees. He stopped sleeping in the daytime. He was extra energetic. And finally, in week 11, I got a quick note from his wife, who I'll call Mrs. Texas Joe. And Mrs. Texas Joe wrote me an email. And she said, Don, how can we remove half the stem cells from Joe? And she said, I married him for better or for worse, and I love him forever, but I didn't marry him for sex 7 days a week. And that is the story of Texas Joe, and it's a happy note to conclude on. Good night, good evening till next week. We'll be back with more guests next week. This is Don Margolis signing off.
If you or a loved one suffers from a chronic disease, I'm here to tell you that you don't have to suffer, as the medical establishment may suggest. You definitely can have a better quality of life and prolong your years without chemicals, scalpels, radiation, anesthesia, and pills, pills, and more pills. I'm Don Margolis, and I started the Repair Stem Cell Institute to make sure you have all the information you need about how this amazing therapy can help you. Visit our website, repairstemcells.org, and learn how stem cells can help improve your life. If you feel they are the best treatment path for you, simply fill out our no-obligation treatment request form and let us personally guide you through the process of finding the best stem cell doctors and centers in the world. At the Repair Stem Cell Institute, we are proud to say that we have already improved the lives of hundreds of patients. Contact us now and take an important first step toward improving your own life or the life of a loved one.